The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
NASA's Artemis II is the first crewed lunar mission in over 50 years. Four astronauts will venture around the moon, preparing humanity for a long-term lunar presence for scientific discovery and exploration.
RS-25 engines lit. 4, 3, 2, 1. Booster ignition and liftoff. The crew of Artemis II now bound for the moon. Humanity's next great voyage begins.
We're smiling at you, like a little Cheshire cat.
Yeah, we caught a view of Earth in window one, and now we're completely distracted for a little bit.
You are doing a fantastic job, and hello, very special hello to Artemis II. Today you've made history and made all America really proud, incredibly proud. We have a lot of things to be proud of lately, but this is there's nothing like what you're doing, circling around the moon for the first time in more than a half a century and breaking the all-time record for the farthest distance from planet Earth.
Some highlights from the Artemis II mission that will come to an end this evening. It should re-enter Earth's atmosphere at about 8 o'clock Eastern time. If you want to watch that, it'll be the fastest a human being has ever traveled. They're saying that once they start entering the atmosphere, they'll reach speeds of probably upwards of 25,000 miles per hour. Again, the other record that was broken was it was the farthest that a human being has traveled from Earth, over 252,000 miles. Thanks to Jesse for putting that montage together of some of the highlights of that mission. And as you see all the chaos on this Earth, as Mr. Fleury has made this point earlier this week, there's this paradox of looking up and reaching out into the stars. And for a lot of people, that can be, I guess, a form of escapism. But God wants us to look up. He wants us to look up at the heavens because we need to have that vision. We need to understand why God created man, what man's incredible human potential is. I remember a sermon that Mr. Andrew Locher gave a few years ago where he was talking about just how easy it is to get wrapped up in your problems. And he said, it's easy to forget to just look up, to look up at the stars that are right there above you. And man's world, Satan's society, so easily crowds that out, gets us overwhelmed with distractions, light pollution in cities where you can't even see the stars. You can't even look up at the universe. Well, this mission has been a great way just to get our minds back on space. Again, it's not a form of escapism. It's not like we just, I want to ignore the problems on this planet and I want to look up and forget about all of it. No, it's about having vision. And we have to have that vision as we look at world events. We have to see where all of it's leading, or it is depressing. It is sad. But there is tremendous hope for mankind. And God, out of His love, like it says in Hebrews 12, out of His love, He corrects. But He also gives that vision through the correction. He's showing you what it's all for. He explains why that correction. Mr. Gerald Fleury has a great article. It's at thetrumpet.com right now. It's titled God's Space Program. He says, God's space program is revealed in Isaiah 51. The book of Isaiah was recorded specifically for us in this end time. In Isaiah 51 in verse 16, God says, I have put my words in thy mouth, and I have covered thee in the shadow of mine hand, that I may plant the heavens and lay the foundations of the earth, and say unto Zion, you are my people. Mr. Fleury says, I think that is one of the most inspiring statements in the Bible. It will make our spirits soar if we truly understand it. God wants to plant and beautify earth. Verse 3 talks about making this earth look like the Garden of Eden, but verse 16 shows that God intends to continue that beautification out into the universe, to plant the heavens. Plant in Hebrew means the same as it does in English, to plant like you would a garden or a tree, to allow something to take root and grow. As beautiful as a garden is, and you look at that imagery, and that takes a lot of work to maintain a garden. It takes a lot of work to look after that. And God wants us to do that for the whole universe. We look at destruction out there. We look at the surface of the moon or any other planet. God wouldn't create something that way. It became that way, like it says in those first few verses of Genesis. But God wants us to get our minds on this incredible potential. And that Artemis mission is just another way to look up, another way to get our minds on the universe. But Mr. Fleury goes through this article and he says there's a training process for those astronauts. You don't just stumble into going to the moon. There's a lot of training and practice that goes into that before you're prepared and ready to go on that mission. And that's the same process that God is putting us through. As He prepares for us to go out into the universe, there's a lot of training so that He can trust that we'll build and plant the way He wants it done. It's amazing just thinking about how incredible these missions to the moon are. The moon is just about 240,000 miles from the Earth. That's 10 trips around the equator of the Earth. And it's one of the most epic things human beings have accomplished, that human spirit, that incredible mind of man that is a God-like, well, not the human spirit, but the God-like mind, or those qualities and characteristics of the mind to be able to build and create these things. But if you look at it in the grand scheme of the universe, we haven't even taken a baby step. Think about how exciting it is when a child takes their first step. It's the first step of many millions that they will take throughout their entire life. The parents are all excited to watch it happen. There's a lot of training and prep work that went into trying to get that little child to finally walk. And going to the moon, as difficult and as challenging and as hard as that is, it's not even a baby step when you think about how big the universe is. Again, it's about getting our minds on the universe, but it's really nothing. This is the best man can do. It reminded me of Jeremiah 10 and verse 23. O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his steps. We can't do anything apart from God. We can't even direct one step. and that moon mission back in the late 1960s, that was exciting. But really, it's just to kind of whet our appetite. Recently, my family and I, we were able to visit in East Oklahoma, of all places. There's an Air and Space Museum out in the middle of nowhere, and it was a great experience. It's not a massive museum. You can get through it in about 45 minutes to an hour. But it was amazing because it had a lot of these rocket engines inside of the building. And these are some of the most complex machines human beings have ever constructed. They had one of the Saturn V rocket engines. I think they're called F1 engines. And you can put one of the pictures up on the screen. Yeah, there are five of those on the back of the Saturn V rocket that was part of the Apollo missions. Those were the first, the moon landing. So five of those huge engines, and one of them was in this museum, and you could just stand there and stare at it for hours. It's a massive thing. It's incredibly complex what human beings have put together. But as I was reading some of the descriptions about it, my wife and I were talking, and it's like a miracle that they were able to build this thing. All of the variables that go into it, they didn't have artificial intelligence to, you know, act out each little scenario and tell them what thing would go wrong if this wasn't placed in exactly the right spot. And again, God probably allowed all of that to happen so that we could get our minds on the universe. That we have the Hubble telescope and the James Webb telescope, incredible technological accomplishments to get our minds on the stars. One of the pamphlet or one of the little boards that was explaining about those engines talked about the injector plate at the back or right at the front of that engine. You can see it there on your screen. Something you would just look at and not think much about, but I could talk about it for hours. There's so much to say about that little component there. And at that spot, there's 1,400 little holes or these nozzles that all have to be placed perfectly so that oxygen can be injected and then lit on fire. And there are so many variables, like this video was talking about there, about how to keep it from shaking the engine too much so that the rocket would just spiral out of control. All of these things had to be done perfectly for that launch to take place. There was one comment about some of the engineers that were designing it and just the level of stress they had trying to get this done. I think a few of them died prematurely because it was just so difficult to get that component perfectly right so that this rocket could function. And at that museum, as exciting as it was filled with just this timeline of America's space program. It was an Air and Space Museum, and there were also, you know, all of these rockets there. They had the Soviet, some replicas of the Soviet rockets as well. But at that same museum, they also had quite a few components from the U.S. Air Force. There were fighter jets. And like Mr. Fleury has been explaining on this show, there's a great paradox. In this museum, we're going to the moon, we're reaching out into the heavens, but on the other side of the museum are these weapons of war. Again, incredible accomplishments when it comes to technology, but terrifying when you look at the ways of mankind apart from God. And part of that museum, they had a replica of the first nuclear bomb that was detonated on a city. The nicknamed Little Boy. You can play the video of this bomb being loaded up onto the plane. But it was a really humbling contrast. There's all this excitement about, you know, explaining about the moon landing and seeing these rockets. And then you walk into this other part and there's just this replica of Little Boy there. It's about as big as this table. And that bomb is loaded onto the Enola Gay, as you can see in that video there. And human beings really don't know exactly what's going to happen. I mean, they had tested these before, but this plane flew over Hiroshima dropped this bomb. Little boy, like I said, it was about as big as this table. And they were playing this video there in the museum. And you see the mushroom cloud. And then think about 70,000 plus people being killed, vaporized instantly. Hundreds of thousands more being killed in that one blast. This is the paradox of mankind, of humanity. All this incredible knowledge, all these great accomplishments, but then there's war, violence, and we can't solve these disputes between human beings. That moment as I was watching that video, I was just thinking about, again, what Mr. Fleury's been saying on this show about signs that were in the last days, and this was one of them, that moment that you're seeing on your screen when that bomb was dropped over the city of Hiroshima, and it needed to be done to end the war. But that was a weapon of mass destruction that human beings had never seen before. And that's what Matthew 24 describes, when there's this era where no flesh shall be saved alive unless Christ intervenes. And you see just the power of these weapons. And that bomb over Hiroshima was tiny compared to the weapons that we have today. This is a sign that we're in the last days. There's all these great advancements that allow us to peer into the universe, and at the same time, technology is creating weapons that are more destructive than ever before. What is the solution here? You look at this world and you just see that man cannot rule man. We can't direct a single step. We need God's help. We need to turn to God, but instead we turn to technology, or we turn to the heart of man. You look at all of the confusing events in this world. There's the back and forth over the ceasefire. Well, was that Trump being a tactician and just trying to buy some time? And there's all this confusion over what it actually means. But of course, as Melanie Phillips brought out, if I have time to get to that quote, just even talking to them is just a sign of weakness. There's war all over this planet. We see the rise in anti-Semitism. There's division. There's disease. Human beings just unable to solve these problems. I thought I saw this headline. I had to read it because it's one of these headlines. We had a story a few years ago writing about just how ridiculous some of these scientific studies are. One of them was researchers discover how to be happy. And it was just like the most basic things you would think. And it was basically God's law, positive mental attitude. And they talked about, well, how good it is for your health to not have stress and to be happy. And you think about the millions, probably billions of dollars that human beings waste on these sorts of studies when that truth is found right in the Bible and explained right in the Bible. And we won't look to that guide. We won't humble ourselves and look there. This article at the New York Times is titled, "Can Food Actually Be Medicine? These Doctors Say Yes. Prescribing Produce, Crafting Meals, More Medical Schools Are Teaching Students How to Cook and Use Food as a Tool for Treating Patients." I mean, who could have known such things? Who could have known that food could be good for your health or bad for your health until the New York Times journalists and the PhDs told us this? It is shocking. I mean, if you're not, you know, aware of it, just how wrapped up this world is in its own ways. And doctors, you would think, well, they know everything about health. No, they actually really only know about their area of expertise. And for most of them, that is just medicine. It's drugs. How does this drug help this problem? And it doesn't really help. But they don't know nutrition. They're not taught nutrition. And it's sad because I mean, you are what you eat. And the result isn't as immediate as the drug. And the drug has however many different side effects that come along with it. I was reading a bit about Ben Sasse. He was a former senator from Nebraska, and he's got cancer. They say he's just got a few more months to live, and he's trying all of these clinical trials with different drugs. And one of them, it says, well, it, you know, helps slow the cancer down, but it keeps his skin cells from being able to reproduce. So he's covered in all of these painful sores as a result of this drug. I mean, man's way is just, there's the solution that brings with it 10 other problems. And then you've got to find another solution for those 10 more problems. Anyway, you look at man's way and we just can't solve any problems. Mankind doesn't know what it's doing. It doesn't have vision. It doesn't know why it exists. Well, I wanted to cover a little bit this. I want to play a Key of David program, and I'm trying to figure out if I can get through this story and leave enough time for it. I think this Key of David program is, I can rush through this story. It's about the AFD winning an election, state election. They're about to win, it seems like, an outright majority in this state of Saxony, Anhalt. And when you see Germany rearming, when you see the Holy Roman Empire rising, we've got to, again, think about the end goal of Bible prophecy, what it's all leading to. God, of course, wants to give us hope, but we have to know Bible prophecy. We've got to see what God is doing here. Isaiah 10, verses 5 through 6 says, O Assyrian, the rod of mine anger and the staff in their hand is mine indignation. I will send him against an hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him charge to take the spoil and to take the prey and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. God sends this army to correct his people. God allows it. And we see Germany rising again on the world stage. And that means we should look at that and then look at our nation and say, well, if Germany is rising, that means that our nations are doing something wrong. God says that he sends that Assyrian empire against a hypocritical nation. We've got to respond to these events. The New York Times has an article, in Germany's East, the far right could soon take power. This is its plan. Since the end of World War II, no far-right political party has held power in German state or federal government. That could change this fall in a small pocket of eastern Germany as economic stagnation and voter backlash toward mass migration batter the centrist political establishment. Polls show the Alternative for Germany party, or AfD, could win an outright majority of seats in September in the state of Saxony-Anhalt near Berlin. The party's agenda, if put in place, would give the country its first look at what the AfD, the second largest federal party today, hopes could ultimately be a cultural and demographic overhaul of German life. Now, this is a far-right party, and the rise of the far-right in Europe is something that Mr. Armstrong and Mr. Fleury have been warning about for decades. In 1998, an outright pro-Nazi party won state elections in this same area, Saxony-Anhalt, and Mr. Fleury wrote a pretty powerful article about it in the June 1998 Trumpet magazine titled Pro-Nazi Party's First Win. And this was just in a state election. They were to run state parliament. And now today we're looking at the AfD getting absolute control of that state. In 1998, they just won a few seats in that state parliament. Mr. Fleury says, it was an election heard round the world. A pro-Nazi party won nearly 13% of the vote in Saxony-Anhalt. This racist party will have 14 members in the state parliament. It's the first time that they had won seats since the end of World War II. But I wanted to draw attention to this quote. Mr. Fleury says, the Nazi extremists are impacting the major parties. The politicians are saying whatever things will win them votes. Politics as usual. So you've got the reaction of the so-called moderate parties trying to keep the radicals from getting power. Mr. Fleury says, this tide of hate is a serious problem that is growing fast. I believe there is going to be a backlash against the extremist parties in Germany. It's interesting that this was over 27, 28 years ago now, and there was that left-wing swing. Mr. Fleury says, but that is not going to change the dangerous direction Germany is going. It is only going to make these political parties more subtle and deadly. You see, the AfD, they're not as outright as this pro-Nazi party was back in 1998. But like Mr. Fleury says, they're more subtle and deadly. He talks about, again, paying close attention to German politics, understanding the German mindset. As Mr. Armstrong said, they're more thorough than America and Britain realize. A year or two later, Mr. Fleury wrote in the June 2000 Trumpet magazine, the European Union's fatal flaw. He says, does it seem odd that these neo-Nazi movements are also strong Catholic movements? And he goes through that history of the Holy Roman Empire. And a lot of these parties, they talk about getting back to those Catholic roots. At any rate, I don't have time to get through all of these quotes, but at the time, and I thought it would be good to play this program as we just watch German politics and look for the rise of this German strongman. He gave a program not long after that election in 1998, and this was just responding to a state parliament in a not a huge state in Germany. And Mr. Fleury gave a Key of David on it back in 1998. It's titled Pro-Nazi Election Victory. And we can go ahead and we'll conclude the show playing that program for you. Again, it was from 1998. Before we play that, we can line up the World Watch. I'll give the guys a few seconds to just get all that lined up so we can end the show or end this first segment transitioning into World Watch. And then after World Watch, we can play the Key of David from 1998 titled Pro-Nazi Election Victory. If you have any comments for the show, any feedback, want to request the literature, you can send all of that to td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you again on Monday.
U.S. President Donald Trump is seriously considering pulling out of NATO, he told The Telegraph in a story published April 1st. This comes after America's NATO allies not only refused to help fight Iran, but also may have coordinated closing their bases to American warplanes. Donald Trump lacks the power to unilaterally withdraw from NATO. Congress would have to approve such a drastic decision, and it is unlikely to do so. But the president could effectively cripple it by stating that he will not honor America's NATO commitment to defend other member states if they are attacked, refuse to share intelligence with NATO allies, or stop deliveries of advanced weapons. Eurointelligence writes that the EU cannot stand on its own apart from American NATO support without a political and fiscal union. It would take the EU coming together as a superstate to wean itself off economic and military reliance on America. To learn more about the prophetic implications of this turn of events, read Why the Trumpet Watches Europe's Ongoing Unification Project. Foreign central banks have sold some of their U.S. Treasury bonds since the U.S. and Israel began their military campaign against Iran. According to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, the amount of U.S. treasuries it held in custody for foreign governments and central banks has dropped by $82 billion since February 25th, reaching a 14-year low of $2.7 trillion. Most international oil sales are priced in U.S. dollars. This means that governments and businesses around the globe must hold large amounts of dollars to buy oil, keeping demand for the dollar high. Iran's attacks on civilian cargo ships in the Strait of Hormuz and the resulting rise in oil prices have damaged the economies of several countries. Higher oil costs have also made the U.S. dollar stronger, another incentive for countries to sell treasuries to get cash or support their own currencies. Some nations are seeking to move away from dollar-based oil trade, which would weaken one of the dollar's main supports. The late Herbert W. Armstrong believed a major financial crisis in America would serve as a catalyst for the nations of Europe to unite into a pan-European superpower. To learn more, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches America's Economic Collapse. The Trump administration continues to negotiate with Denmark for increased military access to Greenland, the New York Times reported April 2nd. Control of the geographically strategic island is necessary for North American defense. The U.S. currently operates one base in Greenland. Negotiations are underway for U.S. access to three more defense areas for airfields, ports, and other operations. Although the U.S. and Denmark have had a defense agreement in place since 1951, President Trump believes that the U.S. needs increased access at a minimum and preferably full sovereignty over the island. When the president threatened to annex Greenland, Denmark, France, Germany, and Sweden briefly sent a small group of troops to the island as a symbolic deterrence against an American takeover. They reportedly also prepared a contingency for destroying infrastructure to complicate any possible U.S. invasion. Some European leaders threatened to cut America entirely out of trade with the European market. The struggle over Greenland highlights the deepening divide between the U.S. and Europe. To learn more about this fracturing relationship, read Atlantic Rift from our free booklet, He Was Right. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The swastika will no longer flaunt its crooked arms above the Nazi shrine. Cleansing fires of war have purged Germany of Nazi power. Let's be sure it never again rises from her ashes.
A pro-Nazi party has just won 14 parliament seats in a German election. That's the first time that has happened since the rule of Adolf Hitler. The world was shocked, but we weren't shocked, and you need to understand why. Greetings, everyone. In recent German elections, Gerhard Frey and his pro-Nazi party shocked the world. They won nearly 13% of the vote in the state of Saxony-Anhalt. Now they have 14 members to enter into the state parliament and, of course, are given great political respectability and new credibility in many ways. And this is the first time, the very first time since World War II and since Adolf Hitler, that a Nazi party has won seats in a parliament or in a state parliament. Where is all of this leading and what does it all mean? Mr. Frey had an anti-immigrant theme in a region where there's hardly a week goes by that there isn't an attack on foreigners by Nazi skinheads, gangs of them. And the great irony of all this is, in that state, there's only 1.9% of the population that is foreign or made up of foreigners, the lowest of any state in Germany, and yet this man talks about that in his campaign. That's a big issue in his campaign, to hide his hatred for other people and for foreigners, many different races of people. The German press, for the most part, said it was a black day in the history of Germany. And the leader of the Jewish people in Germany, Ignaz Bubis, said, I have great fears. That's what he said. Here's a headline from the New Zealand Herald. Echoes of Hitler in a right wing. And also the Times of London had a headline, Brown Shirt Alert, referring to Hitler's Gestapo. Here's another one by Reuters, which says the DVU's strong showing has brought back memories of Adolf Hitler's rise to power in 1933. That's April 28th issue. Let me read you this from Germany Alert, talking about neo-Nazi violence is soaring, Monday, April 27, 1998. 70 years ago, in 1928, Adolf Hitler's National Socialists managed to get 2.5% of the vote in national elections. That's not much compared with nearly 13% polled by the pro-Nazi DVU in Saxony-Anhalt state vote yesterday. Hitler portrayed Germany's problems in racist terms, just as Gerhard Fry's DVU does today. Then, like now, youthful energies of the pro-Nazi movement became attractive to large numbers of people tired of being ruined by economic and social disaster. History is screaming its solemn warning. History is screaming its solemn warning. Now, if you want to think back in history, Adolf Hitler, in 1928, he received 2.5% of the vote. Adolf Hitler did. 5 years later, only 5 years later, Adolf Hitler was in power and he disbanded Parliament. Now, that happened in 5 years. And here we see this Nazi party getting about five times the number of votes that Adolf Hitler got in 1928. This article continues. Only fools cannot be worried about Germany in the light of the chilling ascendancy of pro-Nazi in Saxony-Anhalt state election. Only fools, he said, would not be alarmed by this. And here Gerhard Frey publishes two newspapers and talks often about or has articles about the German successes in World War II, and he's glorifying that all of the time. A little further down in the same article, the anti-Euro appeal to fear and loathing has turned into a horrific success in Saxony-Anhalt. Watch now for the Nazis to march into other key selected states. The results threaten all of Europe. He said, now you watch, they're going to go into other key states and do the same thing, and it's going to have results that's going to threaten a lot more or Europe, and I say it's going to threaten a lot more than Europe. And I'll show you why as we go along. Just a couple more quotes from this publication. DVU candidates campaign with slogans like, "Foreigner bandits, get out. Get out." Now, he won an election in the number one power in Europe. He won an election with slogans like that. Hate slogans. A little further down, it says exit polls show that up to 30% of voters under 30 years old voted for the pro-Nazis. 30% of the young voters. The youths are saying we need a new man with new ideas. Or is it a new man with old ideas that they need? They want a different man. This article concludes, Gerhard Schroeder's middle-of-the-road SPD got the most votes, 35.9%. Chancellor Helmut Kohl's right-wing CDU suffered huge losses and ended up with 22%. So the big loss was for the present chancellor, Mr. Kohl. And they expect that he will probably lose in the fall election in September. And that could very well be a watershed event in Europe and change the political spectrum all over Europe and eventually have a great impact on the whole world. They give some graphs here about how the attacks against foreigners from 1993 to 1997 have increased from 6,000 to 9,000. Where is it all leading? What does it mean? What does this kind of violence mean to you? What does it mean to the rest of the world? Now, we might talk a moment about the candidate who's expected to win the leadership of Germany this fall, Gerhard Schroeder, in his youth, he was an anti-American firebrand. So he has some strong views against America even still, and I suppose he's trying to live some of that down politically. But he's the leading candidate to be chancellor. And notice what he said about foreigners. He said, we must not be afraid of foreign delinquents. He said this last summer. There is only one thing to say to those who abuse our hospitality in this country. Get out fast. Get out fast. Now, this is the man that may be the next chancellor. The polls certainly indicate that. He's 10% or 10 percentage points ahead of Mr. Cole and his party. And he's playing on the fears of the people and the hate of the people. And I mean, you have to believe if this man is saying that, that all foreigners would begin to feel a little bit fearful, I would think, of what is happening inside Germany. I would think they'd be a little afraid. And notice it begins then to spread even to somewhat, I think, to Mr. Cole. This is from the Daily Telegraph, London. Notice what it says. He pointed out that foreigners had invested large sums of money in Saxony-Anhalt's chemical industry. Mr. Cole said that. But said that while foreigners had the right to hospitality, they should be thrown out of the window or the door if they misbehaved. So I think you can see that even Mr. Cole is being swept along in some of this emotion. And I would think the foreigners would be somewhat squeamish about what's happening there because of what is being said. But you see, this is politics. The politicians go where the votes are. But what about the politics of hating foreigners or being down on foreigners in your country? What does that mean? And what does it portend for the future? Well, we certainly need to think about it a great deal because there is a tide flowing in the wrong direction in German politics, and I think the whole world needs to be concerned about it. If you look at what has happened in the past, I mean, that's not being an alarmist, is it? When you consider that Germany plunged the world into two world wars. Now we have nuclear power and in Europe and in America and around the world. Here's what Mr. Frey said in his campaign. Fake asylum seekers and criminal foreigners. He said they should be reported immediately. And he said in Saxony-Anhalt, 10% of foreigners are criminals and 25% are in organized crime. Now, I don't think most thinking people believe that, but this man says that, and he campaigns on that way with a hate campaign, and he wins nearly 13% of the votes. Something to think about. Here another quote, and I have to give you several because I want to give you the media's views of this and let you see what they're thinking. Here is an article by John Schmidt from the International Herald Tribune titled, Surge of Far Right Shocks Germany. Even the Germans are shocked in many cases. And here is a quote, this catastrophic election result has damaged Germany's image in the eyes of the world, said Michael Fuchs, president of the German Foreign Trade Association. Is it going to ruin Germany's image, and why is that so? And do we really understand? Does much of the world even care what's happening in Germany? Well, I hope they do, in view of what has happened in the past. I think we have to look at the reality there and the facts. Another quote, they are rightist extremists of the worst kind, said Wolfgang Heidelberg, president of Saxony-Anhalt's branch of the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution. So, prestigious people are making statements. statements like that, leading people in Germany are making statements about how alarming this is and how appalling it is inside Germany. And really, Germany is the economic powerhouse of Europe today. What if they were to have a depression? Or if the economy were to get very bad, then what would they do? I mean, it's already reasonably bad in the East, more so than the West, but still, overall, they are the economic powerhouse of Europe. This article also says the overall tally meant that roughly 1 in 3 voters chose radical protest parties and rejected mainstream Western politicians, the chamber said. So actually, it's like 1/3 of the people were into a radical party. 1/3 of them in that state. What does that mean for the future? In Jerusalem, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, an organization that tracks Nazi criminals, called the election results an ominous development that will have far-reaching implications in Germany and far beyond its borders. Far beyond its borders. Well, now, that's interesting when they start talking about it far beyond the borders of Germany. What exactly are they talking about? Well, the European Union is now economically much stronger than Russia. And who is it that dominates the European Union? Why, it's Germany. Germany, of course, and everybody knows that's not a secret. The whole world knows it. But what will Germany do with all that power? And if we see the direction that a lot of the elections are going, what does that tell us about the future? What does that tell us about the future of politics in Germany? Let me give you another quick quote from Mrs. Margaret Thatcher that she made in Colorado Springs, Colorado, October 1995. Notice what she says, and it is views like this that got her kicked out of office. Notice, she says, quote, "You have not anchored Germany to Europe. You have anchored Europe to a newly dominant, unified Germany. In the end, my friends, you'll find it will not work." Oh, they are newly dominant, she says. They're no longer passive. They have economic power and they're newly dominant. They dominate the politics of Europe. And in that European Union, which is comprised of 11 nations and they may be thinking about more, but actually they're going to end up with one less than that. And that's because of what it says in Bible prophecy. But when Germany is the most dominant power there and the politics are becoming, let's say, more Nazified, then that ought to be disturbing to a lot of people. Let me give you one more quote here from Patrick Nichols, a man who lost his job for making these statements in Britain. He was stepping down as vice chairman of Britain's ruling Conservative Party, and notice what he said. "I have no great liking for a continent dominated by two countries, the unique contribution of one of which has been to plunge Europe into two world wars in living memory." We remember World War I and World War II. Many people do. Mr. Nichols added, "I wish I was not in the European community. It is far from the merely economic community we were led to expect. And if I thought it was feasible to leave it, I would be off tomorrow." But he says it's far more than an economic community. What does he mean? This is an insider talking. It's not just an economic community. It's a community dominated by a strong Germany. And that's what he's talking about. And that's why he's mentioning what has happened in the past in Germany and in Europe. I want to give you a quote from an end-time book of the Bible called Nahum. Nahum 3, verses 2 and 3, it says this, "The horseman lifts up both the bright sword and the glittering spear, and there is a multitude of slain and a great number of carcasses, and there is none end of their corpses. They stumble upon their corpses." Now, this is about the future of Germany. This little booklet we're going to offer you at the end of the program will tell you all about that. It will tell you how this applies to Germany and Europe and how it's going to impact the world. God knows what is going to happen in this end time, and He's made that very clear. And I want to give you a statement that ought to be sobering to everybody, a couple of them, here from a man who is now dead, Herbert W. Armstrong. And notice what he said in 1962. That's 36 years ago. Quote, "Once the political union of Europe is achieved, the Germans will try to mount on top of the others to dominate, to take over the rule, even over other European nations." Now, how did he know they were going to have political union? And I mean, it's almost here. It's almost here and may very well be here in 1999. But how did he know that Europe would have political union? Why, it could have fallen apart. It could still fall apart. But he says, no, it's not going to fall apart. No, it isn't. There's going to be political union, and they're not going to divide, and they're not going to collapse, because you see, the Bible talks about, in the book of Daniel, in the book of Revelation, a combine of 10 European nations that are going to be a great power in Europe and going to make the rest of the world shudder and do a lot of damage and cause a lot of destruction. But he said that in 1962. 36 years ago, and all of this is exploding in our faces. And in fact, he said, for over 50 years, when Germany was beaten down totally, that they were going to rise again and be a dominant power in Europe, or the dominant power. Here's one of his articles in the Plain Truth magazine, 1961. This is even a year earlier. Notice it says, now, new power block, stronger than Russia. Stronger than Russia. And the subheading, for 27 years we have warned while others scoffed. Now the public press sees it coming, but here is what the world does not see. And he's talking about an economic power. And he's talking about Germany and Europe. And how did he know it was going to be stronger than Russia? And it already is economically. It already is. And he made that statement in 1961, 37 years ago. How could he do that? How did he know it wasn't going to fall apart? How did he know it was going to become such a great power? Why, he simply looked into the pages of Bible prophecy, and he believed God. He believed God. Now, you can know Bible prophecy. You can understand Bible prophecy the same way he did. It doesn't mean there isn't any hope. There's great hope if we heed this message. I mean, there's all the hope of God if we heed this message. We don't have to worry, but God makes it plain what's going to happen. I want to read to you a little history statement by Winston Churchill in a document after two world wars that Germany started. Here's what he said at the close of World War II. "It is our inflexible purpose to destroy German militarism and Nazism and to ensure Germany will never again be able to disturb the peace of the world." Winston Churchill in a signed document with Franklin Roosevelt after World War II. Now, they were determined that German militarism and Nazism would never rise again and disturb the peace of the world. Did they achieve that? I'm afraid they didn't achieve that at all. But that was their avowed purpose at that time. Notice what Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1945, at the close of World War II, We don't understand German thoroughness. From the very start of World War II, they have considered the possibility of losing the second round as they did the first. And they have carefully, methodically planned in such eventuality the third round, World War III. He said that in 1945. And now, do you know the State Department has released classified documents that they had at the close of World War II, 1945, saying the Nazis were going to go underground and prepare for World War III and a great power in Germany once again? And I think it's rather shameful that we just recently, this year, seen those documents. But Mr. Armstrong said in 1945, when Germany was totally destroyed and in rubble, that they were going to rise again and dominate Europe and dominate much of the world. God says in Isaiah 10, an end time book and an end time prophecy, that there's going to be a power that will rise, and He's going to use that power. He's going to raise them to power, and they're going to punish His own people, Israel, which includes the Western world. And He's going to send them against an hypocritical nation, which means an immoral nation, a nation with their morals in the cesspool. You mean to tell me that God will use one nation to punish other nations? Is that the way God operates? Is that the way He does that? Yes, it is. Now, I'll tell you something. Gerhard Frey, that Nazi leader that just won the election, is against the euro, or that European currency that's about to come on the scene. He doesn't want to see Germany lose the Deutschmark, but they're going to. And I'll tell you, he's wrong about that, and he isn't going to stop that, because the Bible says there's going to be 10 nations that unite, and they're going to unite in their currency, in their military power, in their political power, and they're going to rule a great portion of the world. So says your Bible. They're going to rule a great portion of this world. But then they're going to be destroyed by another power that God is going to use to destroy them. And then after that, Jesus Christ is going to return to this earth. Read Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22. Before they almost destroy every human being on this earth, Christ is going to return. So you see, all of this evil is a sign of the greatest good and the greatest good news you could possibly hear. Christ is about to return to this earth and rule it the way it should be ruled. Rule it with love and give the people joy, peace, and abundance, which most of this earth has never had. Until next week, this is Gerald Flurry. Goodbye, friends.